This is an ABC podcast.
See the right-hand column for Delta? 0.2% case fatality. 0.2% fatalities put the Delta strain on a par with the average flu season.
So this is Alan Jones talking last week on his nighttime show on Sky News Australia.
Yeah, and what he's talking about, this is during his setup to an interview with former Liberal MP turned independent Craig Kelly, is complete and utter rubbish. He's grossly misrepresenting data from Public Health England about COVID deaths in the UK.
If Berejiklian and Morrison know this, they'd be condemned for not telling us. If our bureaucrats don't know it, they should be sacked. If they know it but are not informing Berejiklian and Morrison, they should be sacked. Craig, come in here, Craig Kelly. There it is, isn't it, in black and white. The case fatality rate is 10 times lower for Delta than for the original strain.
Alan, it's at least 10 times lower. It could be up to 20 times lower.
I'm Stephen Smiley.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre. And today on The Signal, YouTube has banned Sky News Australia from posting for 7 days, citing concerns about the channel's COVID misinformation. So what's behind the ban? How did Sky get so big on YouTube anyway? And could all this be a test case for YouTube for a new, tougher approach to COVID-19 misinformation?
All right, Ange, so we know that Sky News Australia is an Australian TV channel, right?
Yeah. Clue is in the name, I guess. Its home is on Foxtel, but now it is on free-to-air in regional areas too.
Yeah, and on top of its broadcast channel, it's got a disproportionately big audience online. And if you scroll through the list of its most watched videos on YouTube, there's something pretty consistent about a lot of the content.
But first tonight, in what could be a watershed moment in the US election, this week the New York Post splashed with news of a trove of emails detailing Joe Biden's son's business dealings overseas.
In recent months, we've seen Biden appear confused about key facts, policies, dates, and names.
So now we have the weekend at Biden's. This is the reality show where the Democrats put up a barely cogent candidate for president, but he's ably supported, I have to say, by crazy Nancy Pelosi and the hapless Chuck Schumer.
So a lot of US coverage for an Australian news channel, even compared to this podcast.
Yeah, but why?
That is what we asked Josh Taylor. He is a reporter covering tech, the internet and the media for Guardian Australia. He's based in Melbourne and he's been watching the evolution of Sky News Australia on YouTube pretty closely.
So sort of in the last year and a half to 2 years, they've really gone under this digital transformation where they've really boasted their social media presence on Facebook and YouTube in particular. So now I think they've got 1.86 million subscribers on their YouTube channel, which I think is maybe the biggest in Australia. I think it's even bigger than the ABC's just. And, you know, if you look at the content, a lot of the videos that get the most amount of views, so, you know, millions and millions of views, are stuff that tends to be geared towards the US and particularly sort of like hard right stuff that you would see on their After Dark programs. So there's a lot of stuff about Trump and Joe Biden. And so, yeah, the profile that they've done on their YouTube channel is probably a fair bit different to what you'd see, like, if you were tuning in during the daytime on Sky. Like, during the daytime, it's sort of a fairly standard news channel, but a lot of the stuff that they put up and that travels really well on social media is the stuff that does sort of play into the extreme right of things. And YouTube's algorithm does cater for that, you know. If you are searching for this stuff, it is easy to find, and that's why they're doing so well on it.
Can we take from the fact that a lot of their online content that does well is focused on US issues, that a lot of that audience is based in the US?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assumption. I think that they've realised that the best way for them to grow is to cater to that growing US audience. You know, you only have to look at a lot of the comments that they get on Facebook and their YouTube page where they say, why am I only seeing this news from an Australian news channel? They feel like they've cornered a market that, you know, channels like even Fox News in the US, like they say that the commenters often say they're not getting this sort of news that they want anymore. They're very sort of pro-Trump-esque kind of news. So, yeah, they've definitely sort of cornered that market and, you know, they're going after it despite the fact that they're still operating out of Australia.
Okay, so a huge online audience, especially for content popular on the American right. And from what Josh and other reporters who've been monitoring this can discern, this does seem to be a business strategy for Sky News Australia that's emerged in the past year or two, a period that has, of course, coincided with a global pandemic.
Let's talk about COVID particularly. So how has Sky News Australia, and I mean here both the, you know, the kind of straight daytime news programming as well as the nighttime opinion shows, like how have they been covering the COVID pandemic broadly kind of since it started?
I think the Straight News Channel has been fairly standard, you know, like not too different from what ABC or anywhere else has sort of been covering during the daytime. You know, it has been interesting in the current lockdown in New South Wales to see their political editor, Andrew Colonel, going quite hard against Gladys Berejiklian for not locking down fast enough.
When are you going to acknowledge it's time to lock it down harder to get rid of this thing?
The people of New South Wales know that our government has access to the best health experts in our nation.
It's not shifting. The numbers aren't shifting.
If we need to adjust those settings, we'll rely on the best health advice to do that.
The best health advice has just got us a five-week lockdown. That's what the best health advice has got us, hasn't it?
Okay, but Josh says that argument for lockdown stands in stark contrast to the anti-lockdown opinions of Sky hosts like Alan Jones.
People are not prepared to cop the arrogance and disdain with which they're being treated. The language of fear spills out of every utterance. Listen to the Premier today of New South Wales, this is unbelievable, urging people not to visit their aunties or their grandmother or anyone because of this.
But that could be their death sentence.
What? That could be a death sentence. No hope, no hope. Can't breathe hope. Just more lockdowns.
Yeah, they've been sort of really resistant to lockdown. I think it was only a month ago that Chris Kenny, one of the After Dark hosts, was praising Gladys Berejiklian for not locking down when there were six cases in Bondi.
Once again, the exception that proves the rule is New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian. Faced with a new cluster of four cases in Sydney's eastern suburbs, she has not overreacted. Berejiklian understands costs and benefits, risks and rewards. Tragically, the other five states are run by henny pennies who love to scare the people, burden them with patronising nanny state rules, and then boast that they are keeping them safe. It's dumb, it's damaging, and it's delusional.
So they've always been quite opposed to stringent lockdown measures, but it seems, at least, at least on the morning side of things, they've sort of recognised that they probably should have locked down a bit earlier than they have.
So potentially there's been some evolution on their coverage of lockdowns, maybe because the Delta variant has made lockdowns and the epidemiology around it a bit different. How has Sky sort of covered some of the other controversies of COVID, things like vaccination, the COVID treatments like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, those sorts of things?
I was having a look at some of the videos that they've still got up on their channel. Most of the coverage of hydroxychloroquine seemed to be around, like, why aren't we using it, why in the studies? And then there's a lot of sort of interviews with Craig Kelly, the independent MP who has been sort of advocating for this for quite a while, which was what led to him getting banned from Facebook, I think. So that is probably the most interesting side of it. It was his interview with Alan Jones over the effectiveness of vaccines for the Delta variant, where they massively, massively misread a UK study on its effectiveness against the Delta variant that led to that clip being removed from their channels and them apologising for it. So there seems to be a recognition that they may not have done it, and Alan Jones is sort of... he's kind of gone the reverse now. He's saying, he's doubled down, saying, you know, I was always in favour of vaccines. I've got AstraZeneca, even though I've got blood clots in the past. So, they seem to be sort of having it both ways a little bit on this one.
Right, so a couple of things to note there. There is a big difference between the daytime news content on Sky and the evening opinion shows. In fact, it's basically a different channel. And then even among the evening opinion shows, there seems to have been a bit of a recalibration on some issues recently, particularly around the efficacy of the COVID vaccines, such as AstraZeneca.
Yeah, but on YouTube, that seems to have come too late to prevent a seven-day suspension.
What are the stated reasons that Sky has now been banned, and what are the kind of conditions of that ban on YouTube?
So the way it works is they say that, well, YouTube says that it sort of violates the COVID-19 medical misinformation policies, particularly not allowing content that denies the existence of COVID-19 or encourages people to use hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin to treat or prevent the virus. The difficulty here is that YouTube and Sky News have not particularly said which videos were in violation yet. We don't really know. I think Sky News has said that it was some very old videos, but it's not really clear which ones they were referring to. The way that the ban went, so social media companies have sort of been developing policies in the past year around how to deal with people posting misinformation, and a lot of them have implemented generally like three strikes policies, which basically means that pages that have been found to breach the policies will get a strike, and that will usually have some sort of lockout measure. So the one that has hit Sky News is the videos in question have been removed and they're locked out of publishing on YouTube for 7 days.
And that policy from YouTube, I mean, has that been controversial, and how long has that been the case?
I mean, it's always going to be controversial because there's always this debate over whether, you know, YouTube should just allow anything and everything, open debate. You know, Sky News is obviously very upset about the fact that it's not allowed to publish for the next week. It's going to be a cause for debate, I think, here and internationally, because you know, you see Republicans in the United States already arguing that after Trump was deplatformed from Facebook and Twitter, that, you know, there should be more regulation of the tech companies to, you know, guarantee free speech, even though you can't argue that private companies can't enforce their own policies. So we're in that sort of interesting debate stage where a lot of these companies have sort of almost a monopoly on what they can do on their platforms and what services they offer, but also have this responsibility to make sure they're not sort of promoting misinformation and things like that.
Okay, now worth saying at this point that Sky News Australia rejects that any of its broadcasters have ever denied the existence of COVID-19, and it says that it's never published, let alone removed, videos that suggested that. In a statement to ABC News, a Sky News Australia spokesperson also said the channel is committed to meeting editorial and community expectations and that it supports debate on a wide range of topics and perspectives.
Right, and Josh says, in broader terms, Sky News Australia's official response to this whole temporary ban has been pretty muted and reasonable, which he thinks may not be a coincidence, given that YouTube is owned by Google and Sky is owned by Rupert Murdoch's News Corp.
I think the thing that is interesting here is that News Corp and Sky, as part of that, have signed a deal with Google as part of the News Media Bargaining Code. So they will be getting revenue from Google for arguably stuff that is being published on their YouTube channel. So it is interesting, the fact that Google's taken this step, and also it will probably have financial implications for News Corp, which is why you might not see the company go as hard as you otherwise might expect it to go on this issue.
Right, so this is punitive and it hurts Sky to some extent, but do you think it hurts Sky to the extent that it will be a corrective insofar as we think that they have been posting misinformation? Will this cause them to change their behaviour at all as a channel?
Well, I think it was interesting that they removed that Alan Jones and Craig Kelly broadcast before this ban was put in place. So I think there's a recognition that perhaps in some ways in the After Dark stuff, they've gone a bit too far in terms of causing vaccine hesitancy and things like that. I think this may make them think twice, but I think they've been so well rewarded with the way their digital strategy has been going in terms of building their subscribers from, I think, like 70,000 a year or two ago up to 1.8 million now, that's obviously got to continue. I know that they've expanded what they're doing online now. They've hired digital journalists. They're publishing online opinion pieces. So they're really sort of building up this online presence now, and this might sort of slow them down a bit, but I don't expect them to sort of back down too much.
Okay, now another thing to point out here is that whether or not Sky is going to change the kind of content it posts on YouTube, the place where that content originally ran, namely pay TV and free-to-air TV, is itself subject to policies about misinformation. So the regulator here in Australia is called the ACMA, or ACMA, which stands for the Australian Communication and Media Authority.
Right, and in fact, it's ACMA that oversees the news media misinformation code that seems to be what YouTube believes Sky has breached here.
Right, and Josh thinks those two things taken together raise some questions about ACMA itself, actually.
I think part of why YouTube has done this is because there's that new industry code around misinformation and disinformation that social media companies have pledged to abide by in terms of enforcing what they're doing in Australia and making sure that they're taking down stuff that is misinformation. That can be seen to be part of that. The interesting thing is that about that is that that is overseen by the communications regulator, the ACMA. And ACMA has responsibility for broadcasting as well. And it's interesting that sort of Sky News and, well, YouTube has done this to Sky News, but the ACMA as the broadcast regulator seems to have not really done much around Sky News at all.
So why is that? So the social media code that ACMA oversees seems to have, you know, been such that this content fell afoul, and yet the rules that apply to broadcasters don't seem to have been breached, at least if the way ACMA's handled it is anything to go by.
I think, you know, the way you look at the broadcasting code, it seems to be a bit of a wet lettuce a lot of the time. It seems to rely on complaints, and then there is always a long lead time between complaints and action. So I think that's why, I guess it's much easier for a private company to take action like this versus, you know, the ACMA, which sort of has to abide by regulatory powers and it has limited resources, things like that. That's probably a generous view of it, but I think they're quite limited in what they can do. So, you know, I guess it is interesting that YouTube has taken more action than the ACMA has to date, but not hugely surprising.
Right. So in this instance, it seems like YouTube has a tougher test for what constitutes misinformation than Australia's media watchdog.
Yeah, which is interesting, right? Especially given that YouTube is obviously headquartered in the US, where there is a very different debate about free speech and what kinds of speech should be legally permitted. So is Australia being used as a testing ground here?
I think that's probably a fair estimation of why they're doing it. Yeah, it would be interesting to see how it goes. I think the other thing is, I think there's more of an appetite for misinformation to be cracked down on here. As I mentioned before, we've got that industry code, and the government is considering whether they need to beef that up with actual regulation. The social media companies were at a Senate committee hearing on Friday regarding foreign influence on social media, and there seems to be sort of an acknowledgement from Facebook, Google, Twitter that regulation is the way that they want to sort of, they want a strong regulatory environment to basically tell them what needs to be done. And I think that's more and more what you're going to see. And I think we're probably further along here than they are in the US, and the US is a whole other debate. I can imagine if they took out OAN or Fox News or something like that, it would be a huge fight that they would get themselves into. So I think they're sort of treading the water here and seeing how it goes here first.
That's The Signal for today. Thank you for listening. Our email is thesignal@abc.net.au. Keep writing. We love to hear from you. And we'll catch you tomorrow.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.